Hello and welcome to Supernatural, where we're on a quest to make the extraordinary ordinary and unlock the greatness that lives in every human being. Thanks for joining us. My guest today is Andrea Sapienza. Andrea is a former healthcare professional who has gone from being an RN to naturist and health sovereignty coach. She guides her clients to escape the pitfalls of traditional healthcare and reclaim personal responsibility for their own well-being through a holistic approach that involves quantum biology, proper nourishment, and repairing the nervous system. Now, Andrea and I have been fortunate to connect as part of a coaching certification program that we're both going through right now. We're doing our own inner work, improving what we do, bettering our ability to hold a container for other people's transformation. And one of the great perks of being in such a program is that you get to connect with some pretty incredible people along the way. So, Andrea, it was really our conversation that sparked a desire to do a podcast like this. And I could tell right away that you had a lot of wisdom and experience to share. So I'm super excited to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, and likewise.
So I think we have a very distorted view of health today. We're told that the body just fails us randomly, that declining in your 30s is normal. Even Western medicine defines health as basically the absence of symptoms, the absence of serious disease. And I think you and I are both coming from the point of view that health is so much more. So how do you define health?
Yeah, and you're right that the modern healthcare system really equates health with a suppression of symptoms. And I have found that that's actually not true at all. And that aging, while we're not going to live forever, it really doesn't have to be this compilation of chronic conditions. It really truly can be well-being from the inside out and complete absence of the chronic symptoms that everyone seems to be normalizing. And indeed, our whole healthcare system has normalized. And thus, we don't question that these don't have to be the case.
Yeah, and I find that people are living in so much pain and discomfort. And like you said, we just normalize it. People accept it as part of their existence, part of their fate. We're told to just suck it up and go about our lives. And to me, that's no way to live.
We've really been gaslit to the point where so many people have no idea what it feels like to be in a well body.
I agree. Now, you were a former nurse and RN. You've experienced a lot in your life. I would love to hear a bit about your story and how it led you to where you are today.
So I went to nursing school very young. I became a registered nurse at, I think I was 24. And I went directly into the ICU. And there was a point in time, I have a vivid recall of standing at a patient's bedside, pushing medication after medication, IV, at a scheduled time in a specific dose. And I'm thinking to myself, how does this person's body know what to do with this? And what if we didn't give this? Didn't really square with me that this all was going to get sorted out by this person's body and that the body wasn't going to work if I didn't give all these medications. So that was that was a bit of a flash of a thought that I had that pretty much got suspended in time. And I really got indoctrinated into the system and just kept doing what I was seeing happening all around me and really didn't, really lost that inner compass of maybe we should question this. Maybe there's more here. And fast forward 20 years, still in the system, didn't always practice nursing at the patient's bedside, which was actually a bit expansive for me because I got to be in several corporate settings as well. Including medical sales and pharmaceutical development. So two of the bigger areas that I spent some time. And certainly acquired some key information, some important parts of kind of what's going on, like how the whole system is in operation and perhaps how we got where we were. But at 20 years later, I kind of had that straw that broke the camel's back moment. I was in a situation where I was, my family situation had changed and I had relatively unmanaged stress. I was still working, parenting two newly adopted older children who didn't even come here speaking English. And so it was quite chaotic and I wasn't really managing my stress well. And the old kind of baseline problem of mine, insomnia, really became debilitating. Amongst many other symptoms that I've kind of referred to as we equate them as normal and we even dismiss them or quit even noticing them. But lo and behold, I had quite a few things going on and I really reached the point where I wasn't functioning. And I tried all the things and I just didn't metabolize these drugs the way that kind of the population of people that it was studied in actually apparently metabolize it. They didn't work for me. I couldn't take sleep medications. I first of all didn't even get restorative sleep, but then I had, you know, felt hungover from them. They just were not going to be the solution to my problem. And as other problems mounted, I just really didn't know what to do. And I had a little bit of an exposure to yoga and more and meditation and kind of an introspective reconnection with self. And although it was not anything close to like what was to come, but I had an inkling that maybe that's what I needed to do. Maybe there were answers inside me that I wasn't going to get outside of me. And so I just became really still and asking the questions like, what do I need to know? What would work for me? If what works for everybody else isn't going to work for me, what would work for me? And I kept coming back to food. And I didn't know what that meant. I was eating a pretty standard American diet and hearing all the things. You know, like I mean, I had done the Weight Watchers and I had done the things. I wasn't significantly overweight, so I was told. And again, it was pretty normalized. My weight was pretty normalized. So I thought at the time. And so I just didn't really, I just had to get super quiet. And I came to the knowing, the inner direction, that I should eat what's locally available to me. I need to plug into my communities. So I got to know my local farmers and really ended up eating what I would call, in hindsight, not because I targeted it that way, because that's kind of how it evolved to be, was more like a paleo type diet, which is funny because I had criticism for a paleo diet. I wasn't bought into any of the kind of, you know, fad diet kind of things. So but nonetheless, I ended up really ultimately eliminating packaged processed foods and eating mostly vegetables, fruits, and meats. And I had a pretty profound, took some time, but I had a pretty profound healing. So I went from, it always stretches my mind to kind of list the symptoms that resolved, but I had a climbing A1C, so I was pre-diabetic in my mid-40s. I had joint pain, a lot of joint pain, a lot of generalized pain. My blood pressure was increasing. Periodically, it was actually high. I had years of depression, anxiety, obviously insomnia. That was always been the big one. And then I had also begun to have mounting like gastrointestinal problems. So just nausea, bloating, just intolerance to pretty much foods. And when I made these changes, again, it took a little while, but I had a miraculous healing. But what other people saw was that I lost weight. I lost about 30 pounds, and which was noticeable on my, noticeable for most people, but it was definitely noticeable on my body size. And of course, that's what people cared about. They're still in this kind of this paradigm where you achieve health by losing weight. And of course, at the time, I, you know, it was still pretty new to me as well. And so I shared with people what I ate. And this was kind of like newer-ish to social media, and so I shared with people what I ate, and they, lo and behold, didn't do it. And so I became a coach, and that was somewhat helpful along that journey. I actually used Whole 30, which is fantastic, but I have evolved way past that. I think the 30 part really is to help you get to know food. For me, I stuck with getting to know food outside of that, and I really got to know myself. And as I began to coach and bring in clients, it turned out that they did the same thing. They really, once we stripped away this noise, we were really able to get in touch with ourselves and have this profound inner peace. I, after decades of having difficulty with focus and having depression, I was not taking any medications whatsoever. So, incredible. And of course, not everything entirely healed. And so I just kept on the quest of, you know, what's next? So for me, insomnia greatly improved, but it wasn't just food. And this is where I think that kind of how we're approaching being on this planet, being in these bodies, is it's really more diverse than one single answer. And we struggle with that as humans. We want certainty. We want clarity. We don't want to sit in the unknown. And that's where all the magic is in the unknown. So I've learned about quantum practices, getting sunlight, being grounded, drawing electrons from the earth, all kinds of practices that really shore up my body's ability to be physically functional and well, and all kinds of practices to integrate into my mind how to be uniquely me and independent of a dogma that is not necessarily serving me, might serve the general public at some level. And of course, we do have to learn how to be with that as well. I didn't move out into the woods and away from the world. I'm still very connected to the modern world. I don't practice nursing any longer. Although now there may be becoming opportunities to do so in a different manner. But I really have found a sweet spot in coaching where people can, when we pull some of these levers that we know generate physical health, they become, there's a level of sovereignty there where you really have a confidence in yourself. And so much of that is in uncertainty. And just being able to embrace uncertainty. And for me, I feel like a lot of that came through understanding how my nervous system works. And that's a magical piece as well.
Yeah, and it seems like so many of us, you came about this path because of your own struggles, because you're pushed to a pain point, because you were forced to see that the system that we're told we can trust really didn't have our best interests in mind. I think there's this idea that we can just slap a drug on top of our existing lifestyle without making any deeper changes, that we're looking for that easy fix. What drug can I take? What supplement can I take? And I always joke that, you know, you weren't sick because of a drug deficiency. So just giving yourself a drug isn't going to fix those problems. And I think in our world today, so many people that come to folks like us for help are at this same point. And it almost seems like people have to hit that crisis point in order to change, because change is uncomfortable. And so the pain of staying the same has to be greater than the pain of change. Is that how you see it? Or do you think there's a way that we can educate people and bring people along without having to hit that crisis and that pain point?
You know, I think it is, unfortunately, it is our human nature. We are just driven to conserve energy And it takes energy to question, change, and embrace not knowing. And our culture has made it easy to do that, and to stay in the paradigm of treating every symptom, you know, with a supplement or a medication, as opposed to looking for what really is happening. So, you know, I hope that we access the younger. So I think we all have it. We're all born with it. As children, we have this innate knowing. We have this curiosity about what we don't know. And it's always an inner inquiry married with what's available to us externally. And it gets that inner inquiry gets compressed or denied. And it just because culturally we don't honor that. And so I'm hoping that people like us who are saying, wait, time out, you know, like all, it's all in you. The only way to make any sense of all of this is within you. And I think as we say this more and we demonstrate it and we make it more predominant, that maybe our younger generations don't have to go through the pain. Maybe we become more connected. Just we continue it. We don't suppress it and then have to dig it back out, because we're not digging. We're not creating something new. We're just tapping into something that has been suppressed.
That's so true that it should be natural.
It is natural.
It is natural. We all have it. And I love how you bring up the topic of inquiry too, because I think as human beings, we're all striving for something better. We all have this ideal that there's something more possible, and we're all built to kind of question. And so I think you're absolutely right that all we can do is be a living example in our life, that people need evidence more than anything of what's possible. They need to see what it's like to live a healthy, vibrant life. And if more and more people can do that, we can start to normalize that this is how human beings are meant to exist and thrive together.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how, I don't know, like there's a big, massive system out there and we're not going to burn that down. I don't want to burn that down. That's not necessarily the, I wish it didn't exist. I wish I wish that the bulk of my work wasn't building something up that, should already be there, but it is what it is. And definitely, it's not my intention to burn down what is in opposition, but that is there. And it has a lot of momentum. So, it's going to be an evolution, and the people who are ready. And, hopefully, like I said, our younger generations, we can keep them in that space of sovereignty.
I think that's an important point, that we don't want to go around burning everything to the ground. I think there's this big push from health communities, truther communities, that let's just burn it down, the financial system, the medical system, politics. But it's like we need to have something better in place before we dismantle the old systems. And so that's what we get to be a part of doing, is building this better system and this new way of being before we start to really break down the structures that are in place currently that are meant to disempower us.
Yes, and there is a reconciliation with the idea or reality that these existing systems are harmful and potentially created to generate harm, to generate dependency. And so we do have to reconcile with that. That was definitely part of my journey. And, you know, how do I want to, you know, and I think there's a lot of accuracy in these truther communities. I think there's a lot to offer. I also think that allowing a more peaceful evolution and the devolution of these systems, because when our nervous systems are practiced, I mean, your nervous system is really just a practicing of what it knows. And so to dismantle that, you have to have something in its place. As humans, we there's a really limited tolerance for uncertainty. I mean, that's just how the nervous system works, and we can't change that part. So agreed, it feels better to me to build what feels true to me and let that be the example of the possibility. And it really does, it really does work. There are, there's plenty of people who have no ears for the information. And that's okay. They haven't reached their pain point yet for whatever reason. But there are people who are hearing, this isn't it. Like there's more.
Yeah. And I think after the events that unfolded over the past few years, which we don't need to name, there's been this huge awareness start to arise in the population of what's really going on in these larger systems. I know there were a lot of people in healthcare who realized this is not what I signed up to do. And so there's this big push for health freedom, health sovereignty in these communities, and which I think can mean a lot of different things to different people. So what does health sovereignty mean to you, being that you're a health sovereignty coach?
Yeah, yeah. Really what it means is that you have a unique constitution. I mean, we have biology, but we do have a unique constitution. And a lot of that is how our mind works and how we interpret experiences. But sovereignty is knowing that with your resources, you're going to have access to your best life, to your best well-being, to your highest level of health, that you aren't dependent on anything that nature doesn't give you. And so that's really how I've learned to reframe from food to just a human existence, to artificial light exposure, to exposure to chemicals. Like what is human nature? How does the human thrive in nature? And how can we use that to inform us how to be in the modern world? And so it doesn't necessarily always mean that a complete absence of using our healthcare system as a resource. It doesn't mean that at all. It means having confidence that your unique constitution is being taken into consideration because you're doing that part.
Yeah, I love how you frame that, especially in that it's going to be unique to every person. You know, people are going to disagree as to what's the best diet, what lifestyle choices should you be implementing. But at its core, we're all returning to the same fundamental principles of living in alignment with nature, living in alignment with community, and living in communion with this, you know, whatever you want to call this higher divine power that governs the universal law that really determines our expression of health, because our expression of health is kind of the sum total of the choices we make, the thoughts we think, the emotions we feel. And at the end of the day, we're all in control of that. This is not something we need to outsource and look to some higher authority.
I mean, at the end of the day, the only thing we really have control over is our own mind. Like, biology is biology. Now, we have an experience of it and we have to make interpretations, but that's in our mind. That's in our mind. So, and that to me is that intersection of God and human. It's the mind. What do we do with our mind? And that's sovereignty, is you having full access to your mind to use it to experience your highest well-being, whatever that means for you as well. I mean, some people are potentially fine with a lower physically functioning. And you know, I don't get to determine that. But my job as their coach is to help them formulate the right questions to ask themselves.
Yeah, and something you specialize in and something that you've had experience with is weight loss. And not that we are here to shame anybody or say that a number on a scale is the end-all be-all as a measure of health, but you look at our society as a whole, and even you know, 70 years ago, you look at pictures of places like LA and New York and Vegas, and you won't find an obese person. So it seems to me that something's gone very wrong in the past, you know, 100 years or so. Where have we taken the biggest missteps, and why don't traditional weight loss plans work?
Yeah. I want to say first, before we launch into that, great questions, and I love to go there. It's a bit of a struggle for me, or has been. I've had to make peace with that people come to me for weight loss, and it feels very superficial. So I've had to reframe a lot about that. That said, when I work with people, it really doesn't matter why they come to me. I always start with food because the standard American diet creates noise, unnecessary noise in our brain. And it's just inflammation in our bodies that kind of send us askew. So I always start with food. Where did we go wrong? So to answer that question, I go back to what do we seem to eat optimally out in nature? And I boil that down to two things. We can eat plants and we can eat animals. That's really kind of, we can't eat rocks. It's plants or animals. Although perhaps we can actually, not perhaps, we can acquire energy from sunlight, from magnetism, those things. But in terms of what we actually eat, dietary, it's plants or animals. And if you walk outside your door, you are surrounded by a significant variety of plants, 99% of which are inedible by humans. Not necessarily true for animals. As you walk outside your door, assuming you weren't in a city or, you know, but even so, there isn't an animal. There are probably about 5 animals that are toxic to humans, and some of them are only toxic in high quantity. But almost all animals are edible by humans. So, and all those animals eat the plants. Not all the animals, most of the animals eat the plants. Some are also carnivore. So can we eat plants? Of course we can. We've been doing it a long time. However, it seems as though as humans, our bodies thrive. Our biology is most primed on meat. The nutrients in animal products are in the form that our body can already use. In many cases, they're in a preform that our body has to convert from plants to be able to use. And when you're talking about a body that's not really at its optimal well-being, it's probably not going to convert from plants to. So when we're told what the nutrient content of a certain food is, it's measured in a closed container, which we of course are not, and there's no conversion required. It's just a measurement, and that's not how the human body works. So where did we go wrong? Probably the first place we went wrong. So there is some indication that when we became an agriculture society and started growing and producing grains, that our brains shrunk and we shrunk in size. So perhaps question about whether or not grains should be at least as predominant in our diets as they are. That said, some people eat them and they seem to thrive. And we've been eating them for tens of thousands of years. So they're obviously not going to at least directly kill us. Now, whether they're long-term, again, that's who knows. But it does seem, and you mentioned, so even 50 years ago, but I mean, I think back even when I was a teenager, and I'm in my late 50s, when I was a teenager, people were not overweight. I mean, you know, they weren't. So I asked myself, how did my grandmother eat? What was my grandmother eating? And for sure, we have a lot of vegetables and fruits available to us that are hybridized. So they come to us different than how they would have existed in nature. If you've ever seen a wild carrot, it's really hardly a carrot. So we've hybridized our vegetables, and then we've grown them in crops, whereas, you know, out in nature, they don't grow in crops. So there's some impact to that. And so I don't know that we fully appreciate that. But really what happened, probably more than anything, was the demonization of meat and animal products and saturated fats. And there is actually disclosure now that there were scientists paid off to promote that saturated fat causes heart disease, when indeed, and they were paid off by the sugar industry. So, you know, who's to say if the totality of that is kind of where we are, but we are in a capitalist society that if you make it and they buy it, then you make more and you make it better and you make it addicting so that people come back. And indeed, there are scientists at manufactured foods in the manufacturing food industry that they study the bliss point. So that that perfect combination. We also that creates addiction. We also began to use oil from vegetable seeds. It was originally meant to be used in mechanics, but we had it left over after the war and just made it able to be eaten. And it's very high in omega-6s and pro-inflammatory. And that's what's promoted. It does actually lower HDL, which we're told is the bad cholesterol, but I'm sorry, LDL. But there's really also no evidence that that is a good correlate of heart disease either. So there's been a lot of, I don't know if it was an inaccurate interpretation, but you know, our focus has just been on manufacturing foods that people will eat voraciously, and it's been quite successful. And I find for most people, just taking out those packaged foods and anything that has something in it that's not a food, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I think this conversation around diet is so fascinating. There's, you know, so much information available today. There's so many different points of view. You can find evidence to support pretty much any perspective, but I think it really is what you said, just getting back to the basic fundamental principles of nature. We don't need to be perfect all the time. We just need to get a little bit closer to what we were designed to do, and that's eating foods as nature provides them. It's eating locally. It's getting outside, getting out in the sunlight. So many of us were eating these processed packaged foods, sitting in our bed, watching Netflix, and then we wonder why we feel so disconnected from nature and so disconnected from other people.
Yeah, and it's incredibly empowering to just get your mind out there, you know, and start to think, how is this supposed to work? Like, how did this work before we had everything? What if there wasn't a grocery store? Like, what? How would that work? What if there wasn't a pharmacy? How would this work? You know, what would we do? And just really being comfortable with exploring the answers to those.
Yeah, we could go on all day about this, but I know that you are a little bit pressed on time, so I want to keep us moving along. The reason I brought up this topic of weight loss is because I think there's this idea that you can just take a drug that's gonna melt the pounds right off. You see so many people, so many advertisements on TV about Ozempic, and it's been marketed as this cure-all, like so many other pharmaceutical products, that you can just take this, there's no risk, that it's going to fix your problems, that you can have all the benefits of living a healthy life without the accountability of actually making true, genuine change. And it just kind of perpetuates this pattern that we could slap something on top of our existing lifestyle and choices.
Yeah. And for me, worse than anything, it keeps people spiraling in the system. Outside of the thought system of how does this work in nature? Because what's interesting about Ozempic and GLP-1s, these are naturally occurring hormones. And so the question for me is, well, okay, why isn't your body producing it? You know, like, why would we pay $1,500 to inject ourselves with an unnatural dose of it when I'm here to tell you, you can for sure eat a meal that stimulates the natural hormone, for sure. And it's a long-term solution. You know, I'm fixing more than just one hormone, which, you know, when we get siloed into, like, the body just doesn't work that way. And that's another thing that humans really struggle with. The body's just, it's responding to all the inputs. And it doesn't differentiate into systems the way that our healthcare is. It does not. It's all connected. So it's been interesting to watch. I of course feel badly for people who are really dependent on it being their solution. Because some people seem to be having success. So, another thing that that comes up for me often is that the more I do this, the more I see that I think we're too impulsive in evaluating the effects of certain things. And so, for example, I think when somebody has an appendicitis, then we take the appendix out, we think that we've solved the problem. But I think if we look long term, other problems begin to develop. And that's just one example, gallbladder being another. There's no mistakes in our body. Our body's always responding. Our biology's always adapting to whatever our input's in. So the question for me becomes, what's the input?
Exactly. And it's like, if you remove something like a gallbladder or a thyroid, how could we do that and expect that it's not going to have all these downstream effects in the body? Because the body is a perfectly balanced system. It knows how to return to homeostasis. It knows how to heal itself. And so whether it's removing an organ or taking a drug, we love to say that it has, oh, these are possible side effects. But really, no, they're just effects.
Yes.
It's a natural effect of what we do, and we take the desired effect and we call that the cure, and then all the other things we group under side effects.
Then we wonder down the road, well, why do I have difficulty with this? Why do I always get colds, or why do I always get the flu, or, you know, why do I have chronic this, chronic that? And nobody equates it to having removed a body part that we presumed wasn't, or having taken any number of medications that, again, I like to consider that they're just kind of kicking the can down. They're morphing how the body's able to respond, but the body's still responding.
Yeah, and I think that's the case with so many of these pharmaceuticals too, is people just don't know. We're not informed of what the possible effects are going to be. And so you really can't blame people, but I think that's such an important part of health sovereignty, is being informed of both sides of the argument and being able to make an empowered decision. So if you choose to have this operation done or take this drug, it's coming from a place of, I know the potential risks, I know what I'm doing, and this is the choice that I'm making. But so often we're not informed. We're told that this is a perfectly safe product, there's no risk involved. And so it sounds like you've had some experience in your personal circle with Ozempic, and I've heard some horror stories about all kinds of side effects, you know, ranging from blindness to the stomach being paralyzed and people not being able to come off of it, because my limited understanding is basically it slows the digestive tract and it paralyzes your stomach, and that's why you're losing weight.
Yeah,
and
unable to eat.
What are the risks that people need to be informed about before they make the decision to go on to a drug like this?
I mean, I think the question always is, what do we not know? How does this work in the body optimally? And what do we not know? Like, what are the possibilities? And that's where I'm asking for people to consider what they're holding as uncertainty, because it's so much more empowering when you're asking completely different questions. It's the same question, but from a completely different perspective, completely different mindset. So, I mean, I really ask people to fully understand, like you said, make a fully informed choice with the knowledge too that we haven't used this long term in people, so we don't know. And the human body's just not designed that way. So what's wrong with how the human body was, why isn't it working the way that it was designed to work? I mean, I think that's the most powerful question. Not will this drug fix what's not working, because it won't. It will might get you the desired effect for a while. But it's, I mean, even if you have, let's say, a micronutrient deficiency and you replenish that nutrient, you still haven't fixed the problem. You still have to look at what's not functioning optimally. And I don't want to take out that we do have some genetic variabilities. We have epigenetics, but these are the questions. Like, that's why it's individual. That's why when we study a group, and that's all that you get when you study a medication in pharmaceutical development, it's you get the group outcome, but there's not one single person in there that is a group. Everybody's an individual.
Very well put. Now, we're going to start to wrap up here. And I think for those of us who are on this health journey, no matter how young, how old we are in it, of course, for ourselves to live the best life that we can to impact others. But we are also in this for the betterment of humanity and the next generation. And so you mentioned earlier you have two kids, correct? And I think, you know, I walk around in public today and I just think it's so sad seeing some of these kids because they're not taught any better. They're, you know, you can see how almost uncomfortable they are in their body. They're struggling with their health from a young age. And you really can't blame these kids because poor decisions, poor lifestyle choices, dietary choices, they just kind of get passed down generationally. And so how have you educated your kids about health, and how do we start to educate the youngest generation so that our children know what it means to live a life of health and vibrance?
Yeah. For my children, so one of my children is had disabilities that we didn't know about. And it's kind of been a barrier. But the other one, he got to be the beneficiary of my journey. And also to his advantage, he is from Eastern Europe and they eat real food there. So when he came to the United States, we started feeding him the standard American diet, and he couldn't have been happier or more addicted to sugar. And I couldn't say, shouldn't say couldn't have been happier. He was enthusiastic about food. But he always liked real food. But he did become addicted to sugar. And he was the beneficiary of when I got sick and the whole family's diet changed. The last thing I was going to do was cook any differently for them. So they came along for the ride. And fortunately, they were tolerant and enjoyed food. And he really learned how to cook. I didn't know how to cook when this whole thing started. And I didn't make it complicated. I just figured out how to cook. I just got in the kitchen and figured out how to cook. And, wasn't always great. But over time, it's gotten really good. And he actually really embraced that a lot. And then when he went to college, he's 22. When he went to college, he lived with other kids that he had gone to high school with. And I mean, they eat pizza rolls and, processed chicken nuggets, and they won't touch meat that comes on a bone or, So he, for probably community's sake, just did what they did, and he figured out really quickly that that was not going to be a long-term solution. And so he actually is a really good eater. I wouldn't say he chooses to eat perfectly, but he is not confused about what this food does to him. So, foods that aren't great in high quantities. And, you know, you mentioned before that you don't have to be perfect. And I think that's so true. And I see this so often in my coaching where people are surprised that they haven't been perfect and they've gotten results. And that's another message that I really think we need to get clearer on, that consistency is way more powerful than perfection. I'd rather see you do 75% for 2 months than 100% for 4 days. Like, you're just not going to, you know, you're going to get so much more out of it. So those are two big pieces, is demonstrating for people and allowing for that, allowing for the fact that we are in a world where everything is food and drink centric, everything. And so how do you be in that and still be there for the social reasons and balance out the food that and drink that's present? So for my kids, they become just really aware, mostly of food. In terms of thinking through beyond food, they've been out of the house a little bit longer than that. So they're that part's new to them. But my son for sure has questions about it, and his girlfriend has a bakery. She bakes out of her home, but it's a certified kitchen, and she sells it at farmers markets, and she does some wholesaling locally. They live in Wilmington in North Carolina. And she caters to dietary restrictions. So that's been interesting, too, to watch that kind of, you know, what the ingredients are and just kind of how people perceive it and just their mindset behind that. So that's been hugely educational. And they ask a lot of questions about these other pieces. But I am encouraged that they know about food in a way that most people in their age range do not. So it's happening. It's available to people. And I don't know your story, how you know what you know. But, you know, you're definitely a younger generation than me. So it's happening for sure. There are people. And my encouragement is just, I have for years been a proponent of food and now other practices as well, because insomnia was just my gateway to sovereignty. It opened the door, but it definitely, food was not the entire solution to my insomnia. It's definitely a longer, more evolved story. But again, I always start with food because I just think you can't even perceive that there's something else beyond addressing food. So yeah, it's out there. It's happening. Even over the time, the kind of the lengthy period of time that I've been at this, I've never stopped talking about it, even if I was in the type of job where I wasn't coaching full time. I just felt like I just kept saying what I needed to say and just kind of opening people's minds.
Yeah, beautiful. And I'm similar to you. I was pushed right to the edge. It was my own pain and my suffering and the medical system that didn't have answers for me that really, you know, push me to where I am today. And I feel very blessed that happened at such an early stage in my life. But I know not every young person is lucky enough to have that happen and to be forced through that transformation. And so I think you're absolutely right that it is about that education element of just showing younger children that your choices have natural effects. And if you put something in your body, this is what you can expect to happen. That I'm not going to tell you what to do, but just be aware that you are in control of your life. You're in control of your health. You're your own sovereign being, and you can make the choices you want, but this is what you can expect if you make good dietary choices versus poor dietary choices or lifestyle choices or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and what also kind of jumps out at me that I want to say is that, you know, when we talk about going back to nature, I always use that as my reference point. Well, obviously we didn't have social media, we didn't have even electronic information available to us. So it is indeed a reconciliation and balance of that information, because when I it wasn't that I didn't reach my pinnacle of pain early. I mean, I was sick in my 20s for sure. But I just didn't have access to the information. So what a great time. I think that people even well, particularly probably outside of licensed health professionals, we're the ones who need to be talking about what's available, what the alternatives are. So,
Yes.
yeah.
And before we log off, where can people find you, Andrea? Where can people learn more about what you do?
Yeah, so I'm mostly I coach one-on-one for the most part. I'm probably in the process of developing some programs that are quite affordable and accessible, but I am at Vibrant Health RN, which is an old handle I've had for quite some time on Facebook, and the Sovereignty Coach on Instagram. So I just post regular food for thought kinds of things, and then when I have openings in my coaching, I usually post them there.
Great. Well, yes, people need more of that positive and uplifting content in their life. So definitely check Andrea out.
I appreciate that. I really find it to be so much more optimistic and encouraging than this paradigm that somebody else outside of you has your answers. Yeah. I enjoy waking up each day knowing that I get to be the boss of me as opposed to I need to defer to somebody else. So.
Yes. And our final question, real quick, if you could share one short message with humanity at this time, what would it be?
It's okay to not know. I think we really have to embrace uncertainty that allows us to open our mind to inquiry, and we're always going to end up with ourselves, but it's just okay to not know.
I love it. I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. You've shared so much valuable experience and just the depth of the knowledge you've accumulated, your life experience, the suffering that you've overcome and come out stronger on the other side is so inspiring to people. And I hope people will find value in this, see a little bit of themselves in you, and be uplifted to really take control of their health and their life and step into their true power. So, thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed our conversation. I learned a lot. It's been great connecting with you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much, Chad.